Hey, welcome to my show. I'm Schnoodlebug. This is a DIY podcast about making stuff no matter what. As always, this episode is brought to you by Schnoodle Video, your one-stop media shop. Black Ant has been producing his unique brand of hip-hop and dance music since attending high school in Hollywood, Florida. With an ever-evolving discography and a carefully calculated online presence, keeping track of him can be hard, even for a fan like myself. Fortunately, he took the time out of his busy schedule to talk shop.
It's funny because I didn't think about it until one of my friends, and so one of my longtime friends, which... he played the synthesizer in that crack hotel that I sent, and I played guitar in the crack hotel. And even before that, I was like, because at that the crack hotel, we're like 16, 17 years old. When we were in middle school, like 12 years old, we wanted to be world famous rappers. And we thought it was going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then we also thought we would instantly get sued for stealing beats. So then my homie at the time, his name is Saki, and he's just like, yo, I think you should make beats. And I was like, yeah, let me try it. And at the time, you know, I had one of those Yamahas with like, you know, 127 sound packs or whatever. And you take one of them and they have the drum kits and the whatever. So then you're BSing, you're doing a little something, then you accidentally do something that's pretty dope. And that's what gave us the idea. And like I said, we were 12 years old. I'm 32 now. So it's been such a long journey that you forget, like it just becomes part of you. And not that you take it for granted, but it's just so normal to just be making music. And so that's really where it came from. We wanted to rap. And the funny thing is, we never released no rap, nothing. And that crack hotel is one of the first of like three. And we only made noise music. You know, we were going to be rappers, but the only thing we could actually like finish. And those noises were just jams, right? Those noise albums were just jams. But if you follow it, because I cut them, I edited them, you know, I would kind of like the way Autechre would do it. You know, they would jam and then they're like, oh, this sounds like a track. This sounds like a track. That sounds like a track. So I did the Autechre thing with that. And that's how our jams would go. And then we just put names to them and then boom. But it just got fun. I was like, you know, just I realized I like to be challenged. And at the time, you know, I'd be the only one who could rap, whatever. I could freestyle, whatever. And rapping is fun, but the beats, that was the thing. I was like, how am I going to do this thing that's in my mind?
Right.
And how's everyone going to hear it? And how long is it going to take? And is it going to take my whole life? I don't know. So just like any other thing that you practice, you know, you got to keep practicing it to get to that point. And you get to that point, now you're like, all right, can I do the second joint? Am I a one-hit wonder? And then you get addicted. You just keep going.
Were you releasing that stuff like right away, or were you kind of keeping it tight to your...
I didn't know how at first. And once again, my boy Saki, this guy, like he was like, I was the hands and he was the brain. Like we were as one. And he would be fine. He's like, oh, you could put your stuff on SoundClick. So if you remember SoundClick in like what, 2003, 2004, whatever, then we would do that. And then he'd be like, yo, MySpace Music. Boom. MySpace Music was a turning point. Because then that MySpace Music era honestly lasted for me from 2006 to 2009. And at that point in time, I wasn't Black Ant just yet. I had other monikers, you know. I had like AK-40. I even had one called Biggie Huges. That was like middle school. And at the time, my thing was to make beats for the homies, to make beats for friends. I wanted the community legend kind of feel. So we were all in Gifted and stuff like that. So we had certain access to stuff. So sometimes they would play beats on the morning announcements. And that was crazy. That was sick. And, you know, you just hear that shit coming out of TV. And you're like, what the fuck? I made that. And so then, boom. And then I didn't settle on the Black Ant name until I came up with it in 2008. But I slept on it. And it was actually, I actually got into a car accident. I got hit by a car when I was 16. I was riding my bicycle. And I thought I was going to die. This show's pretty epic. I got a gnarly scar on my ankle from it and all. And like I said, I was riding my bicycle and like I was at the stop sign and so was the truck. It was like one of those like a Dodge or something, whatever. So we're, you know, we're perpendicular to each other and I'm about to take off. I'm like, he has to see me. Like, what the fuck? I'm on a bike, whatever. I'm going to, and you know, I'm a pedestrian. Let me take this shit. Son of a bitch kept going. And he knocks me over, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, yo, he's is this for real? And it's funny because I'm also wearing Is This For Real, the from the K-Town, the Koreatown Oddity album.
Yeah, yeah. So I noticed that. I love that.
Yeah, so Is This For Real? And so everything's okay, even though I can feel the bike wrap around me and shit. But I'm like, if he keeps going, he's going to run me over. So whatever. I scream to the top of my lungs. And instead of backing up slowly, he like slams on the reverse and that yanks my ankle across the asphalt. Shit. Yeah, exactly. And the way you say, oh shit, I still remember. There's this lady across the street parked in her car watching the whole shit. And she goes, oh shit. And I'm like, damn, this real. It really just happened. And that shit hurt, yo. That shit hurt like a motherfucker. And then like at the time, like I'm 16, I don't have a cell phone until like I'm almost 18, right? So this Tony Shalhoub looking motherfucker gets out of his car and calls the ambulance. And I'm like, yo, Monk just saved my life. What the fuck? But I'm still kind of just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, did I really just get fucked up? And like I said, I remember feeling the bicycle wrap around me. And the guy gets out of the car. He takes the bike. He discards it. And I look at it. And it's just like the cartoons, yo. You could wear that shit like a mink. Like, it's warped, yo. And so he discards that shit, whatever. First words out of his fucking mouth, he's like, you got to get up, kid. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. Like, you just ran me over. Like, what the fuck? So then, okay, then cops, ambulance, everything. And then I just remember the cops coming out. One of them, he looks at my ankle. He goes, nice, bro. And he, like, daps me up. I'm like, what the fuck, bro? Like, what the fuck? And, what? And then whatever, I'm in the ambulance, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, I go to the hospital. And the thing was, I was in a rush to go home because I didn't want my mom to spaz on me being out late. So, but I was out even later, right?
Yeah, of course.
So now I'm in the hospital, whatever, and then I'm chilling. And then one of the cops comes into the room, I'm like, what the fuck do you want? Like, what's going on? You know? And he has my book bag, and you're kind of fucked up. You don't even really recognize it's your book bag. You just see the cop with a bag, and you're like, what the fuck is this? Come to find out, I had left my book bag at the scene. In my book bag was my laptop. And like I said, you know, this is 2008. It's 2008, I'm 16. So, you know, I'd make beats, and we used to, like, I'll just go to my homie's house with the laptop, Fruity Loops, we make beats, we freestyle, record them off the microphone off of the laptop, you know, whatever, kid shit. So then, anyway, so now, like I said, it's 2008, J Dilla just passed in 2006, I'm like, yo, let me just make some beats right now. Let me get my, like, let me kind of live this J Dilla moment real quick. So then I'm just making some beats, and none of them were really that good. I got one that was really hot, but none of them, they're all trash, realistically. But anyway, I just to have that feeling. And then that's, like I said, that's in 2008, like in July 30th. Like I got a track called 730 or J30, something like that. Sometimes I might just say 730, which also piggybacks on Ebonics, right? From Big L, you know, if you 730, you crazy. So I feel like every good superhero story got that like death and rebirth, right? So 730, mm-hmm. 730 for Black Ant. And so then, so that's, I'm 16 at that point. I'm actually a sophomore going into my junior year of high school. That's that summer. So then at one point in August, my ankle's still healing up, but it's still not all the way. But whatever. We're supposed to start school, but there's a storm coming because I live in South Florida. You know, hurricanes, tropical storms, blah, blah, blah. So we don't start the first day, but I started that first day. So then I started making beats at home. And then, like, I fucked around with the compressor. And then I got that sound that I was looking for. So from aimlessly just making beats from like 2004, 2005 to 2008, I had all these different monikers, but now I finally, like, just messing around with the compression, I finally got that Black Ant sound. So that was like around August, and then that's when I knew, all right, I think I'm ready for this Black Ant thing. So that's when it really started. Like, it started like late 16 going into 17.
I'd love to get into the Black Ant sound. Like, how would you describe that?
For me, I think I'm going to say RZA, I'm going to say Timbaland, I'm going to say Pharrell, I'm going to say Just Blaze, I'm going to say, what's his name, Jim Johnstone, right? The guy from WWE?
Yeah.
Attitude Era? Yeah, the Attitude Era dude. And then all the other things, you know, I grew up, if you can see the flag in the back, I'm, you know, grew up in a Haitian household. So there's a lot of those elements of, you know, the percussions, the way that the keyboards are. Some people feel as if it's creepy, but growing up, what I realized what it really was, it sounds creepy in the westernized, right? But it's really like you're contacting the spirits, you know, you're contacacting your ancestors, you know. Getting more and more, I studying more about the Haitian Revolution and realizing, oh, that's why I carry a bit of this rebellion to me. Like, it's not even on purpose, but it just comes out. Like, if I hear something I don't agree with, like, I can't fake a smile. You know, all these things are wrapped in there. And that's why I feel like, you know, my boy Romulo from Schematic Records, you know, he runs Schematic Records, and he's like, your music, your sound has this thing, this like visceral thing that you can never get rid of. And I feel like part of that is the history. You know, the history that through my ancestors and the lineage and all that, you know, I'm not saying like I'm, you know, number one revolutionary. I haven't visited Haiti just yet, but it's in the bloodline. You know, I hear my father's stories. I hear what he went through when he came into the country, and like I hear how he handled himself. You know, I didn't know that. Right. And I'm like, oh, that's what I do, too. So everything comes from something. And then,
right.
You know, and then, you know, the other stuff, you know, like growing up at the time, South Florida, you know, like. The Latin music is another thing that kind of finds its way with the percussions once again. It's all Caribbean to me, you know, the time signatures and whatnot. And then, of course, you know, when you're like 12, 13, Linkin Park, in a sense, you know, there's a little bit of those. Like, and then, you know, you're watching wrestling that gets snuck in there too, that alternative like rock. Like, it's mad funny because like, I got to a certain point in high school. I'm like, oh, man, fuck that shit, bro. That shit's lame. But then now I'm playing it back and I'm like, that's why my shit sounds like that, you know, like. I can't really like pretend anymore, you know, the Nirvana and stuff like that. And then of course, you know, it's like everything, bro. Then you got the jazz. Like I played trumpet. That was the thing I did before making beats. I played trumpet for the school band. I did that shit in sixth grade 1 year. I got tired of carrying the trumpet. Like my bus was always kind of almost late. So I never had enough time to put the trumpet in the locker. And so, intro band was six periods. So I'm carrying that shit for five periods, you know, sometimes five times a week. And I was like, fuck that. And then I was like, you know what? I know how to read music. So then boom. And then that's what kind of led into it. I was like, well, I know how to read music. I'm technically trained. Let me try something. Let me try my own thing. Cause this is as much as I want, you know? And then of course, you know, then I learned a little bit more, learned piano, learned guitar, fuck around with the drums. And then. But the beats was always the thing that like, oh shit, I think I got something, you know? Well, that still comes back to, I wasn't really big in the Miami noise scene, but the Miami noise scene is, you know, the International Noise Conference at Churchill's and stuff like that, happening once a year and stuff like that. That's something I always wish I could have done one time, but I think Churchill's closed down, got sold or whatever. So I don't know where they're going to do one if they do another International Noise Conference, INC. But that stuff, it's crazy because, you know, sound travels, right? Regardless, right? It still travels into space. So maybe somehow, you know, because where I grew up in South Florida, I grew up in Hollywood, Florida, which 20, 30 minutes north of Miami. And I would go to those shows. I would go to those. My same homie that got me into the beats, he was always like, yo, let's go check this out. Yo, look at this. You know, let's expand. Let's explore. So there was always a piece of that. And then that's like the crazy part. Like, so then with the Autechers and the S&Ds, the Mark Fells, the Pops, you know, the Wolfgangs and all that, Wolfgang Vols. I don't hear that till much later. Till like I'm already kind of like approaching or a little bit beyond my 10-year mark. And
so cool.
And so then when I hear that stuff, I feel so validated. And then what's even crazier, I actually don't link up with Schematic until 2020. Meanwhile, right. If you're following any of Schematic, that's just been around since the 90s, you know? And it's just... If in 2009 had me and Romulo met or something like that, wow, like what, you know, it would have been, Black Ant would have been a different context. Like it would have been more of a Miami thing, perhaps, who knows, but things happen the way they do. And I think they happen the way that they're supposed to when you're ready to handle them. And so being 17, hella immature, I don't know if I would have made certain decisions the way I handle it now.
I remember the first time I was trying to find track 4 on your previous release was called Black Ant 101.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was gone. I believe it was Tachyon something Drift was the old title. And now it's called Flat State, and it's on that Brock Lesnar release. So I'm curious about that kind of transient post-release kind of approach where you kind of take things away, bring them back, rename things. Maybe they're kind of edited. What's the approach there?
That
or the philosophy rather.
That, you know, what I feel like the beat scene has always missed is a certain grittiness and like ghetto-ness in a sense. Not like ghetto and like super hood, but ghetto like it's not all the way consistent. It's a little it's a little flimsy in a sense. Like, you know, when I first got into J Dilla, you know, it was finding those beat tapes with no fucking titles, like track one, track two. Then you get another beat tape. Track two is actually track 17. And now that track two in another context works at position 17. And you got to imagine, they don't have no names. They're probably just, you know, just off of a cassette. Something really like, you know what I mean? Like some shit my homie got, and I don't know why I have it, but here I'm going to put it up, you know? So I wanted to create that kind of feeling. I also used to, like, you know, when you're using like LimeWire back in the day, you find like some different version of a song that's popular, and you're like, what the fuck is this? What? And so I wanted to create that kind of thing because I don't feel like, I feel like it clearly lacks, because like, back to the beginnings, back to the 2008s, the 2009s, Flying Lotus is the man. And his shit is polished. Polished. And that shit, like, I remember when I first got my compression going, I'm like, yo, I'm on to something. Then I hear the Flying Lotus Los Angeles, so I'm like, oh shit, I'm almost too close to the Los Angeles thing. And then finally I land on Roz G. And what I learned from Roz is just like, ain't no rule to being raw. Just do that shit and make it work, right? So that's where I'm kind of doing my noise thing. And that's where my stuff is kind of minimal. That's where, okay, so it is kind of Mark Fell or whatever you want to say. But realistically, then when I stumble into reggae, that's when I'm like, oh, that's where all this shit really started from. I end up writing like a dope ass paper on that shit. Like in my undergrad, I wrote like, I took a Caribbean studies course and we had to write on anything, right? So I was like, this is how reggae influenced hip hop and techno. But anyway, that's a whole nother conversation. As I was saying, that greediness, that like, I did this shit myself. I did this shit in my bedroom last night. Yeah, it ain't gonna sound polished. Like, I don't have no massive studio. I don't have no team of engineers. It's just me. You know, on some Fountainhead shit, you get me? Like, you know, I got a track where I'm like, yeah, I felt like Howard Roark because I ain't ran. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? That. Yeah, so that's where I'm coming from. Like, this is from my bare hands, you know? And now I'm actually like reading a bit more about strategy, and I'm reading like, what is it called? The five rings, and like the last chapter apparently is no thingness, right? So basically your bare hands, right? So yeah, it's gonna be a little, ain't gonna be completely perfect, but you know, I'm gonna use that to my advantage because that's the shit that kind of lures you in, like, you know, the cracks and the cuts, the clicks and the cuts or whatever, you know, like, oh, you know, it's mad funny when it's in Europe, it's like IDM, but then when it's here, it's like, oh, lo-fi, you know, whatever.
I don't know which edition I was reading, but it starts off with the painting. And it's a beautiful painting, but he did it in like one sweep because he's such a master swordsman that he was able to just with one movement make this blade of grass for the bird to be painted onto. It's interesting that you're reading the Book of Five Rings because like that almost kind of like meticulous ability to take a machine and do what you do with it. Like, I know what machines you use, you know, obviously, and you post them, you're very like open about the machines that you use. But I've never heard anyone make the sounds with those machines that you've made. Life of Pablo came out and people were talking about that kind of, oh, he's pulling the album and it's coming back and it's slightly edited and there's a different track listing and there's a new version of so and so, and that kind of conversation around what is an album,
right?
What is it? Because there was this kind of idea that it doesn't hold that kind of value of, I guess, prepping for a physical release and then bam, it's out there in the world. And the digital version is just kind of like a representation of that, that you can listen to. But, you know, it was all kind of put into making this quote unquote album, right? Or this release. And that wasn't really the case when you were just kind of uploading music to the internet. And, you know, I'm, you know, I don't want to say guilty, because you know, it's, I think it's up to the artist at any point if they want to pull whatever they want from the internet, and then maybe later they re-upload it. But yeah, no, I totally had that, like, no, I'm just going to pull this. And, you know, for the most part, I'm pretty glad I did what I did in order to kind of curate my discography and all that kind of stuff, right? So I think there's a lot of value to it. And I think, yeah, you just, it reminds people, like, no, the artist owns it, and the artist kind of gets to do what they want. As long as they're living, you know, they get to kind of treat it the way they do. And that's kind of the beauty of the internet, right?
Completely. I agree with that completely. And the other part of, like, with that Black Ant 101, you know, to release 101 beats, and it was more than that. Cause so back to how, like, sometimes on those J Dillas and those Mad Lib, like, 60 beat whatevers, there'll be like three beats on one track or whatever, you know. It was just supposed to be this thing that existed one time, like a passing comment or something, like, you know, because, yeah, what the hell am I doing? 100 beats? Like, what the hell? Like, there's some resources in there. Like, I can make something happen. So if you were there for that moment and you got it, great. You know, you're part of that. Like, that was that thing. Same thing now. Like, can you find them? Can you find any rap mixtape in the stores or anywhere now? You know, mm-hmm. Like, how are you going to find a Young Jeezy? How are you going to find a Dipset mixtape? Like, maybe YouTube, but physically, like, and then those are mixtapes, right? Now those things are probably, to get a physical copy of one of those, probably more than getting a whatever 12 inch of whoever, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing I want to create, you know?
JFK from Death From Above 1979 and Mastercraft, he put out this song called Baby Techno, and it was on two mixes. It was played on the Mastercraft Essential Mix on BBC.
Okay.
And people were clamoring for a physical release or any kind of release. And to me, it, you know, we already lived at the point where we can just kind of, it's like that thing. If you heard it on the radio and you had your cassette and you press record, you know, you got it. And if they're not going to release it, you know, which he never did, those versions exist and they're just fine. You can download them, you can find them and kind of make them your own, clip it where you'd like, but those are the ways you get them. They're in two different pitches, so choose your version, choose your poison, and just go from there. But this kind of like democratization of ownership, or like kind of just like, why aren't you kind of, we're in the internet, just have fun with this, just take it, you know. It's take it, and if it happens, it happens, and if it doesn't, whatever, you know. But you've got this rip of it, and so be it, right? Take it while it's out there,
pretty much. yeah right now it's hot. And then I will say, now that I'm a little bit smarter about mixing and mastering, I gotta give a shout out to Ashray Jenkins for that. He's been giving me a lot of like advice, and you know, just like, hey, try this one, try this VST, try this, try that, you know. I just stumbled across this, yo, you're not gonna believe what this one will do. So then, you know, it's great. So then boom, I apply it the way I would do it, and now, like, I'm, you know, bringing, it's so bizarre to like bring something back to life from, you know, decades ago. And so now, you know, yes, it is an old track, but you didn't hear it like this before. Now you can really, especially when I get like a track from the MPC, like an old one, for one reason or another, a lot of things get lost recording from MPC to computer. And then now I'm able to kind of keep all of that and then bring it back with all the different, like, all the different mixing tools that they have, all the mastering tools that they have. Like, I'm using Fruity Loops 20 or something like that. And it's just so, it's like, wow. Like, and so now it's like, I don't know what these audio engineers are going to do, because I'm doing it on my own right now. So this is how we're going to get into the whole, the DIY part of like how to survive as a musician and stuff like that. So yeah, right. we end up meeting through MySpace like in the 2010s, and it's hilarious because I know my music is confrontational and it's got that edge, and I kind of got that personality. But my thing is, it's not beef, just be better. Like, that's always my thing, and I know it makes some people uncomfortable, and that's the other thing I feel like the music scene is missing. Like, you know, like back in the day, like if you're following like hip hop and you're following like rap beefs, it's so the other rapper could get a little better. You get me? You know, yeah, that shit sounded whack because I think you could do better, and I'm going to show you, and we're going to go head to head. Like, we're going to roll, we're going to spar, and you're going to find your weak points, and you're going to learn from that, right? So we kind of had one of those, but it was still like, because Trey's similar in my mindset, or in our mindsets, like, we're almost on some yin and yang. Like, we're sometimes the same people, but just at different times. And So he sent a track, we're just on AIM, and he's talking, and he's like, yeah, I'm working on some shit, and he sent it to me, and I'm like, this shit could be hotter. Send me the stems. Send me the stems. Sends me the stems. Then I kind of chop it up, do a bunch of different things. And it's one of the tracks on our like Finding Peace. It's the one with the Styles P acapella. That's actually that's actually the start of our friendship. And he's like, yo, this shit is hard. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know, da, da, da. And then because I kept it 100 with him and I wasn't kissing his ass and telling him, yeah, it's amazing. I was like, nah, bro, like I heard your other shit. Like this, you know, this ain't it. And then that's he was like, okay, he can keep it real with him, with me. I'll keep it real with him. And then we just always, you know, trading tracks, talking, blah, 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 talking about life, blah, 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 just whatever. Then in 2013, I actually visit him when he's out in Compton, and then we kick it for a little bit. And it was cool because the moment I got there, we literally made like 5 beats, like the moment I put my bag down. Like it was just so boom, boom, boom. And then just working on tracks, whatever, and just whatever. And then I go back to Florida, but we still keep in touch. Now it's a little after 2020, maybe 2021, I just graduated from physical therapy school, got my doctorate in physical therapy, and you pass that national board exam, you get, and you can apply to work in any state. And that was always my plan. Like since high school, I was like, I gotta do something that can make it easy for me to get to California.
Right.
Because yes, I'm in Florida and my friends are feeling it, but Florida is always waiting to see what LA is going to do.
Right.
And so I'll always be in second place.
Yeah.
In a sense, you know, like I think I saw like one of the Bandcamp releases in the comments. They're like, yo, this guy, he's been ahead of his time for like decades. People have been sleeping. And truthfully, it's probably because of the location, the geography. And truthfully, like I didn't, maybe if I stayed in Miami and running with the schematic stuff and the Danny Days and this and that, DJing at clubs and this and that, it would help, but I'd be DJing. I wouldn't really be Black Ant in a sense, right? And of course, I'd probably be doing more Enix, techno, whatever. But to get Black Ant the way that I see it, I was like, okay, I gotta get out of Florida, you know? Because I would, like, I'd mess around with different collectives. There was this Orlando-based collective called Free Rice. I love those guys. And it was great, but I never lived in Orlando. I lived in Hollywood, Florida, which is about 3 hours away. So I couldn't get to the, you know, when I would finally get to play, the crowd would be dead. You know what I mean? Like, oh, last week was popping. I'm sorry about this week wasn't popping. Things like that always happen because I wasn't close to the source. So then I was like, all right, let me just figure this out. So then boom, get the degree, get the career. Now, when I'm out, you know, now I'm here in California, I'm not, you know, I got my own apartment. I'm not sleeping on the couch. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like, I'm making, like, I'm doing it the way I see fit, you know? And I feel like my music represented that sound of that, like, independence. And I had to kind of, I always felt like it's so funny because people say the music is ahead of its time. The music was a little bit ahead of me. And I feel now I look the way the music sounds, you know? I never had facial hair, bro. Like, this is like a new thing, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
And I've lived life and I've had some PTSD and I'm a little bit older, I'm a little bit wiser. And now I'm like, oh, now I'm catching up to the music. And so, like I said, going back and you're mixing these tracks from 09 when you're like 17, it hits a little bit different. Like it actually, like, I feel it a little bit more. Like I had already like written the layout for myself. And then that's how, like, and so because I always stay tight with Trey, and Trey, you know, Trey's working on his Buried Light label. It's a gang of us. It's like, you got to check. I don't know if you ever follow Ludum's music, but his stuff is brilliant too. So he's part of that. We have a female rapper, Ingenue. She's part of that. Another cat, Vagues, a.k.a. Miles, a.k.a. Raven, a.k.a. Vague Tracks. He's part of that. Him and I are kind of like another yin and yang in a sense with the multiple aliases and like similar sounding, you know, flows and stuff like that. And it's just once I got here, it was pretty dope because when you finally, what I've been learning moving out to California, when you finally decide to do the thing that you want to do, you're going to meet like-minded people because you're going to be where you want to be and so will they. And of course, y'all going to connect. And that wasn't really going on in Florida. So I had to figure out how to make it a sustainable and, you know, make it pop, right?
How early on did you come up with that plan? Because that is such a smart plan for, you know, going with the flow. It's so versatile in the sense that, you know, should the scene move for whatever reason from LA to elsewhere, you would have been able to do that with that plan. How early on did you come up with something so So reliable like that.
After I got hit by the car, bro, that shit straightens you out. No, honestly, like, okay, because like I said, I was 16 and like I was at that point in high school. I was always like a gifted student, honors classes, but like I was also like, man, if this shit is stupid, I ain't gonna do it. And like I said, I was making music, whatever, getting stoned, and like, fuck it, like I'll just do the minimum I need to pass these classes, whatever. So at the time, bro, like my fucking GPA was like a 1.7 or something. It was trash. And then I went after I got hit by the car, whatever, it's time to select your courses. I dropped out of all those gifted classes. I went to all the regular courses so then it would be easier to bump the grades up so I can actually graduate on time and shit. And I end up taking, by senior year, I'm like, because my parents, like my whole, like the one thing with like anybody Caribbean, your parents or your brother or your sister or whatever, somebody's going to be medical background. So
okay,
my father's hospice nurse. My mother's was a CNA. My older sister's a nurse. My younger sister's a nurse. Everybody's doing that shit. And I'm like, whatever I do is going to have to be something medical. It seems like, because it's demanding, there's always going to be a need. There's always going to be a job. And I'm like, all right, let me fuck around. So I learned a little bit about Basquiat, and I learned he bought an anatomy book. So my senior year, I took anatomy. And I had this like one-on-one with the professor, with the teacher. And I told her straight up, like, I love music. That's the only thing I really care about. Like, that's my domain. That's my thing. However, the way I want to do it, and if I do it with no backup, I'm going to starve. So I got to do something else. And I just knew it had to be medicine. And then just kept thinking about it. And I don't know how I heard or learned, but physical therapy is like, depending on what the setting, depending on where you work. But if you work like in a regular outpatient clinic, you know, like I sprained my ankle or I just got ACL repair, whatever. It's a clean field. You're not really dealing with blood. You're not really dealing with shit. You're not really dealing with bodily fluids. Now, if you work like in a hospital, if you work in a nursing home, yeah, expect that. You do home health, expect that, of course, right? And I fucks with all of that shit. Like, it's all life, you know? And that's another thing I started learning. Like, that whole coming and going with my sound, bro, that's inflammation moving. You know what I mean? That's blood flow. There's only, like, a limited amount of blood flow for our body. Like, we don't have enough to digest and run. You either run or you sit your ass down and digest. So that blood is coming and going. Thoughts are coming and going. Respiration. Gas. You know, Wolfgang Vo, that whole gas exchange shit, when he did a little bit of LSD and all his music sounds like you're standing outside, sounds like somebody breathing. That's why I relate with all that shit. It's life, you know? So all that was kind of already there in a sense. And then just thought about it hard. It's just crazy because like getting your doctorate for one is going to be hard, but the way that they make physical therapy school is so fucking difficult, bro. But it took me a hot ass minute. I started my community college shit at like 18, get that degree, take a year off, go for the bachelor's degree. At that point, I'm like 22, whatever, 2-3 years, 25, bum, bum, bum. And so on that off year, that's where the Black Ant 101 comes out, right? I'm like 25, 26, some shit like that. And go, you know, end up going to Tokyo and stuff like that. And then Tokyo was like the last hurrah before PT school, which was 2019. And at that point, right, I think I'm 26, 27. Then I graduate 29, almost 30. And then by 30, I'm like, all right, let's go do this shit. Because I had, you know, I don't really consider it sacrificing because I learned so much and I developed so much. And I liken, especially now that I'm reading all these books on strategy, I likened it to like, I was just in the dojo, y'all. I was just building up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you watch Dragon Ball Z, Goku's in that ball and he's traveling. You know, like I was just arriving. And it worked out that, and I told myself too, I'm like, okay, one or the other, you're either going to blow up or you're going to become a doctor. Like, you can live with either or, bro. Okay, so the Seiko Mark, I love this shit too, because there's like, to me, there's a Miami Trinity in my like story or whatever. So this is what actually helps. This is actually what helps with schematic. But before, so Miami in the 90s had this crazy IDM scene, and Autechre played out there, and this is kind of connected to Autechre in a sense, you know? And so La Mano Fria, which is my guy who actually did those covers for the Seiko Mart with like the Red Ant and then the Blue and this and that. He used to run labels, and his whole thing, because he has a graffiti background, he just wanted to make art. He wanted to make album covers, and then he'd get the musicians, whatever. And then that was the whole thing. Whatever. So he's like, eventually, like, I don't know, he's like DJing some shit, DJing the party. there's a shorty in the crowd feeling him, whatever. He ends up flying to Japan, da 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 da. And then he kind of starts facilitating all sorts of networks and stuff like that. So this is like pre 9/11 kind of a thing. And he was actually in Tokyo when 9/11 happened. So he's just doing that, right? So he's and like what the fuck? I'm probably playing a trumpet at that point, right? And so then we end up meeting, like, and then like years later down the road, like maybe 2016-ish, we meet at some like New Year's party. One of my like old homies passed my music to him because he was still doing a label thing, whatever. And he's like, yo, yeah, I'm feeling this. Okay. Uh-huh. And then he just pretty much passes it on to some people in Hokkaido, which is where Seiko Mart was. And then the second one, which is lesser known, which is the other Cyanosis project, Crypta Many Layers was the name of that label. But both of them, you know, up in the north of Japan, Hokkaido. And that's how that just went down. And so, like I said, so that's like that first piece. And then this is how the whole, like, the Enix or the Jean-Pierre Anthony or the Gradients, whatever, you know, however you got that album. So there's a dude named Bobby. Bobby's friends with La Mano Fria. And La Mano Fria and Bobby are both actually friends with, you know, Romulo, who runs Schematic. So to me, that's my Miami Trinity. Because they're the ones who actually, like, got it going for me. And they were one of the first people who, like I'll never forget. Like, Rom is just like, how the fuck are you not a household name by now? And that was like, I was like, you know, because sometimes it's in your head, but you're gonna sound wrong if you say it. You know what I mean? You're gonna kind of have this chip on your shoulder. No one's going to really want to fuck with you. So I'd rather let people say it for me sometimes, right? So, yeah, and that's how then boom, boom, boom. And then that's how the Brock Lesnar comes about. But it's from those three dudes. You know, those are my Miami Trinity. And
hell yeah,
they really opened it up because everything after that and then being able to, like, quarterback getting that one season of The Lost off of Schematic through, you know, with Ashray. Yeah, because finally, like, I don't know. I forget how we're talking about it, but one of us is like, you think Trey would, like, drop a release with Schematic? I'm like, let me ask. And then I was really proud of that one because that one ended up winning, like, what, Album of the Year or some shit like that with Bleep. And I was like, oh, shit, I fucking quarterbacked that. That's even tight, you know, like.
It's so cool.
Yeah, you know, so it's, I like, you know, when you start going in the right direction, shit unfolds, you know, and it's all good because everybody's winning. That was the other thing, too. That was another piece of it, too, because sometimes you fuck with some people, they're using you, man. And you will be in LA and they're just going to be like, yeah, that's just my friend from Florida. Meanwhile, you know damn well you're standing here because of the fact that I let you use a microphone in my studio or I drop some insight on how you can boost your shit, you know. So there's a piece of that. And, you know, I know I'm straying away from the question, but that's the thing that kind of, you know, helps me appreciate Trey all the way more because he never did that shit. He wasn't going to wait until it was cool to listen to Black Ant. He was just like, yo, I fucks with that shit, you know? So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of that thing, you know, a lot of those things that are in between, you know, then and now, you know? I had this freestyle on something, just not really thinking about it. And I didn't use it. Like, it probably took a year or two before I used that name. But I was like, they square without the Enix. And I was like, yo, that's cool. But what the hell am I going to do with that? And then, you know, like, it's mad. This is funny because, like, can he stop talking about Trey? But that Enix for me really is like, you ever have a smoke detector and the battery's out and it goes,
eep. Oh, yeah. Eep.
So once I started kind of like, you know, after a while, like, I kind of want to depart from the Black Ant sound. It wasn't on purpose, but it was just like, oh, I don't ever want to hear. It's already bad enough I'm releasing the same beats every now and again. But I don't want to make another beat that sounds like another beat, right? So you just start doing other things, you know? Like, I'll tell people it's me when I'm not myself, you know? Because it's still kind of there. The Black Ant is still kind of there if you hear it. But it's like if Black Ant went inside of Black Ant. And, you know, like, and so, so I had already, like, had other, like, it really, really started maybe around 2012, 2014, but it got a whole lot more consistent as the years progressed because now I started understanding what the sound or what I was trying to do and, you know, just getting, it hit me one day. I was like, yo, I was technically always making techno, but it was just slower. And now I started speeding up, right? I started speeding it up and using, because some of them are originally like Black Ant beats, And then I go back, take it to 120, take it to 130, and then just move things around, have it hit it in a different angle. But I'm using the same stem sometimes. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome. It saves a lot of brain power.
Right.
And so it's just kind of this thing. And then I said, you know what, let me just call it Enix. I don't know why, but the Enix kind of sounds like that smoke detector battery sound. And a lot of my tracks, I don't know if I was just playing to the key of that, since I just always heard it. Like, it's always, you know, it was always in my room or whatever in the house. You always hear it. And so it came out of that. And then I feel, you know, same thing with every superhero story. Like, it's like, you know, Goku becomes Super Saiyan 3, Super Saiyan 4, levels up. Yeah. And even though you think you was at the final point, you leveled up again. You know what I'm saying? And that was the thing. It's like, if you sometimes you beat the video game and then they make you start the game over. But what if you could play a whole new game with all the shit that you gained and you didn't lose?
New game plus.
Right. So then I felt like that's what I was doing with the Enix. And I could just hit different emotion with it. I can hit different thoughts, ideas. And it just didn't have to be in the realm of, it still feels like hip hop, but it's not, right? The beats and the bass and the thumps, yeah, I'm always gonna have that boombastic, but like, I can do other shit. Like one of the tracks, it's not released yet, but you know that fucking, you hear it when like it's an emergency.
Oh, the air raid siren?
Yeah, almost like the air raid siren, but like there's someone talking like, and it's like, oh, how does it go, man? Like
an emergency alert system?
Yes, the emergency alert. Yeah. I sampled the fuck out of that shit. And it's such a fucking joy to, I end up debuting it the first time I play in LA, and like, it was awesome. And
hell yeah.
And just, you can just do that now. Like, you can go a little bit further. And the other thing I've been noticing, anytime I would toss an Enix like or an Enix track during a Black Ant set, everybody's always like, what the fuck was that? So that's how I was like, okay, this can't be Black Ant no more. You get what I'm trying to say? Because it's a whole nother thing. And that's what...
Interesting.
So in my mind, I'm like, oh, once I start playing this Enix thing, yeah, I am transforming into something else. And like, Black Ant, you know, and I play a lot of video games, whatever. So like, Black Ant is already a boss. And then this is after you thought you whooped him. And then he just like, oh, fuck, it's even harder now. And I would notice that like anytime, like, and then what gives me a good like validation when I do, because I play the Enix towards the end now, and everyone's always like, that's the one they talk about the most. And like, the Black Ant is okay, it's not bad, people feeling it, but once that, it's like, it was already hot, but how did it go even hotter? And so that's when I'm like, okay, it has to be another thing. You know what I mean?
I love it. It's funny that you mention that certain Enix tracks are just Black Ant tracks kind of sped up to a higher tempo.
That, because even Enix has an evolution. Because like, that was the other thing as well. There's another piece to the Black Ant story, another homie, my boy Biobel. He has the most like elusive, like, I'm like, you, like, no one actually really knows his shit, but like me and two other homies. But he ended up getting his, like, he, out of the group, he was the first one to get published on vinyl. And he basically did a house track. So that was the other thing too. Like, we were all kind of just like going more into the techno thing. And so, So before Enix, I went by like Pierre Anthony, then Jean-Pierre Anthony. I was still trying to figure this shit out. And that was what I was going to do at first. So yeah, that was a Jean-Pierre Anthony or Pierre Anthony. But anything, yeah, that was definitely like an early Enix track that you heard. And I did that on purpose just to kind of like, fuck you up, you know, like, what is this? Like, what, and where is it? Like, will it come again? Is it going to be more cohesive? Like, what the hell was that? Like, for it to be like a glitch, for it to be like, you know, like, if you ever played Metal Gear Solid 2, like, you get towards the end of the game, fucking radar spazzes. Like, it's a bit of that, you know what I'm saying? Like, to get my Hideo Kojima on your ass, you know what I'm saying? I end up kind of flipping the Deep Inside sample and just a little snippet of it. That's that one, man. I played that in LA and like, oh. Cause you know it's cool, you know, when you play the shows and then you get tagged and you see everyone's filming and tagging the same video. I'm like, oh, then okay, everybody's filling that song, great.
Hell yeah. Do you know what is that song called now?
That one's still unreleased, but like, I don't even know what I'm gonna title it. But that, truthfully, that's something I want to release at the end of the year. Hell yeah. Well, speaking of releases, I actually just put the purchase in for like 200 records. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So there's some, but this time it's finally gonna be Black Ant. Cause that's the other thing too. I switched to Enix, and Enix is just kicking Black Ant's ass. Like, Enix is, like, just straight up always getting on some vinyl. And it was just so funny because I decided to be Enix maybe around 2018-ish. And Pinecone Moonshine, which is really, like, a drum and bass, but, like, a jazzy, like, a really, like, avant-garde drum and bass label out in Portland, Oregon. They reach out to me, and they're like, yo, can we put this one track on a compilation? And that one, that track was really a Black Ant track, but... It was enough, not and more almost, that okay, I can make that the first track to start telling the story. So then bam. And then we actually got a release, we got a remix that's coming out sometime this year. And then of course, like, oh, here's why Bobby was also significant, because he was once La Mano Fria introduced me to him, he was in the process of starting a label called Pilas. And so then he went ahead and pressed some records. So the Jean-Pierre Anthony, the Gradients, that was the first part. And then I was like, but I wasn't always sold. Because I kind of wanted to keep my name kind of private or whatever the hell. I was afraid that somebody like in a professional setting, they catch me cursing and they try to use it against me not to hire me, whatever. So I wanted to do that. But now, like we were talking about earlier, now I'm seeing, yo, I got to converge. I got to bring both sides. So I'm a little bit more transparent about what I do. But anyway, so boom, Enix is on vinyl too. So it's like currently right now, it's like what, 3-0. When it comes to the vinyl for Black Ant versus Enix, I'm like, how the fuck? It's me though. It's me. How is Black Ant not? So this is gonna be like the first ever Black Ant release on vinyl, and I had to do it myself. Yeah. You feel me? But it feels great. It feels great to know that, like, you know, like, it's kind of an easy finesse, bro. Just stack up some crypto when the time is right, sell it, and then make your move. And that's really it, man.
It's almost going back to the wrestling thing. Like, you have these multiple monikers that are going against themselves and stuff, and you're building a real world here, so...
The music takes a life of its own. Like, I don't never imagine that, you know? And I'm happy for that. Because, like, it's great that, you know, it's accessible, and you're going, you know, you see it, and you hear it, and you're inspired to live your life the way you see accordingly. That's a big part of how I want to live my life, right? And so I think that was another big piece. Like, I tried to control. And that was the thing about Black Ant. I tried to control a little too much. And I think that's right. I think that's another reason why I kind of was slept on for quite a bit, because I was just, I wanted to be heard here, and I wanted to be seen with this. Man, fuck all that. Like, now at my job, you know, like, patients come in and they're interested, like, yo, what's this? What's that? What are you doing? Da da da. They're buying shirts. None of them fucking heard a song. And I used to think that was the wackest shit. Like, if you saw somebody wearing a shirt and they couldn't name a track, like, what the fuck? But no, that actually means more.
Oh, yeah.
Because your name and your brand is getting there before you do. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I'm getting a little older. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, when I was 17, I wasn't going to handle none of this shit correctly. Or at least not the way I feel is correct, you know?
Totally. That's beautiful. So now that you've kind of, you're taking control of the band camp and, like, your own label, what is the future of that now? Like, what do you have planned now?
All right, so I rap, I make beats, I make the hip hop, I do the techno, there's the noise thing. So I pretty much, yeah, I am, like, I could fuck around just like the way Miles Vague's tracks. You look at his Bandcamp, it's all his other aliases. He has a universe. I am a universe. It's like same thing. Like, it's like wrestling. I am Vince McMahon. And that's what you can expect. Now, it's just a lot of times it's just like I just wake up. I'm like, yo, let me just see if I can get this done. And this would be a good idea. But to expect, you know, to expect vinyl, to expect cassettes, compilations from just, you know, the homies and whatnot. But a majority is going to be my music. I also think if you read that Five Rings, man, it's just like the artist has to take control in every part of the art. While I know I just said, yo, I was too controlling. Yeah, it's controlling in what happens to the music. But take control in the production, like, you know, the sound, the material that it's on, right? The content, the context, those things, the marketing, all that other stuff. Like, the artist should be the label.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the story.
Absolutely.
The story I'm telling is the artist. You know what I mean? Like, I am like that, and that's what, like, yeah, I made these split personalities to realize when they're all combined, I'm just being myself, and that's my journey. Like, learning to be comfortable with myself. Like, yeah, Black Ant had the mask on. Enix gets fucking crazy when he takes the mask off. You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
Right? Like, that was always in my mind. Like, I even seen it, like, okay, since I don't really have no tattoos, like, maybe we can get a guy who has a similar frame, wear the mask, and then I come out one night, no one knows who the fuck I am, but it's actually me. beating the fuck out of Black Ant. You know what I mean? And that's what all these, like, when Enix was getting all these releases. Because that's the other thing, too. A lot of times it'd be tracks that I was like, I think this was, I don't know. And then people be like, no, let's press that one. That one's the hottest one. I'm like, oh, fine, sure. You know, be more sure of yourself. Be more confident. Push it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Follow Black Ant through the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to the Schnoodlebug Show. Spread the word, tell your friends, and go make stuff.